Well, a very good evening to you out there, and thanks for tuning in to us here on Radio Kerry for another Terrace Talk as we begin a new inter-county season for real. The McGrath Cup out of the way, of course, and the Hurling League is out of the way. And we will tonight be concentrating, of course, on our footballers, and we'll have a chat with Dan Kearney for our ladies footballers. After 7 o'clock, we'll check in with Sarah Hoolan, former Kerry footballer of note as well. She now is taking up marathon running. That'll be quite exciting to get that. Another great team on the rise and certainly doing well over the last number of years is the Clarney rugby ladies team. We've followed them from under 16 all the way up to under 18 and a half, and they're in the Munster League final next weekend. We'll have a couple of them on board as well. And then to wrap up this evening, we'll get into the car and we'll talk a little about rally and the World Rally Championships, and I suppose all the benefits of it coming to Tralee and the South West in the next couple of years. John Kennedy and Liam Brosnan, they're suited and booted and almost late actually. Well, John was here loads of time. Liam had trouble parking his big van. You should have a small car, Liam.
Little scooter.
Little scooter to get in and out. And of course, if you have any comments on that Kerry Derry game, or indeed the Kerry Waterford game in the ladies yesterday, you can contact us on 066 712 3666, or text us on 083 300 3300, or WhatsApp as well. Ivan and Keane are looking after all the backroom stuff for this evening. Now, last year Kerry travelled to Donegal and they lost their league opener by a point, and last Saturday, Liam, we repeated it again, lost by a point. I would say though, there's a little bit more hope having lost by a point this time than there was maybe last year. Maybe less negativity, maybe.
There is. And look, I suppose, look, when you always lose, there's a big kind of soul-searching done in Kerry after, no matter what game, whether it's McGrath Cup or League or Championship.
Everything gets magnified.
Everything, yeah. But, you know, coming out Saturday night, it was the first time after losing the first league game for me that I came away with, there's green shoots there. No, and what I mean by that now is, I don't know, we had a lot of, we had three new guys starting, and and I thought that when you look into it deeply, like, I think there is potential there for the year that these guys can offer Kerry something. No, you have the two Gainies, you have Killian Burke, like Sean O'Brien in the middle of the field. I know, I suppose coming off before half time isn't nice, but at the same time, he was up against two of the best midfielders in the country. You know, last year, you could say, and I think it's going to take time for any young fella to bid in. Like, we're gone from senior county championship now, they're inside with Kerry, so there's only a handful of players, and I was even thinking about that, like, so David Cliff or Colin Cooper, who on their debuts really stand out. Now, it's going to take time for these fellas, and I do think that there is potential there. Joe O'Connor around the middle of the field, another fella as well, you know, as well as we'll talk about Graham O'Sullivan, you know, and Dylan Casey and these guys. But I do think I came away Saturday night and I said, yeah, there's green shoots there, because Derry came down fully loaded for us, you know, and there was a lot of surprises, and there was, in my programme here, there's so much blue by a row, I can hardly read the names, there were so many changes. But no, I was happy enough with our second half performance.
So your father hope?
Yeah, definitely.
So you're either father good hope or father no hope, John, so which one would you be after the next
match? It would be similar enough, I'll be honest. You know, I suppose when you saw the changes by Derry with the Glynn lads in, you know.
How much of a statement of intent was that? I mean, 3 days ago, they were winning and everybody saw it, and Mickey Hart apparently put a phone call in, left it to themselves, didn't say, listen, you have to, a whole lot. They turned up. How much of a statement of intent was it that, yeah, we're going to come to Kerry, we're going to come to Kerry with 13 of the 15 players that actually started in the All-Ireland semi-final? And how much of an intent was it from the word go that they wanted to win this?
Huge intent, really, you know. And like it says, I suppose Mickey Hart wants to put down a marker. He's won the McKenna Cup. You know, obviously his intent is to stay up in the league first of all, and see what happens later on. It's a strange one. It's seeing how competitive Ulster is. Mm-hmm. Being honest with you, because, you know, for these lads it's going to be non stop. But look, Conor Glass is the captain. You know, Eaton Doherty, they came in there, and they were back training two or three nights after winning in All Ireland. Do you know that it shows the dedication they have? Obviously, they see something under Mickey Hart. They were so close last year. But coming down with that team, Kerry, which, you know, a few newcomers, an inexperienced team, really, it could have gone horribly wrong for us, but it didn't. Could we have won the game? We could. Mm-hmm. Did we deserve to win it? Not really.
The importance of the comeback, that was the thing that sent us home maybe a small bit happier.
I think so. I think so. And
you know, goal chances.
We created five goal chances. Do you know? And I mean, when they look back in it, Stephen O'Brien and Jason Foley will be wondering why they didn't convert. You know, because they were in control going through great moves, you know, but a lot of positives for Kerry as well, even though we lost. But unfortunately, with the competitiveness of the league, you know, it's a huge game in Clones next weekend.
Massive, yeah.
Because especially what Manning did to Dublin.
Yeah.
So it goes to show that, you know, if you don't get a result in Clones, you have Mayo coming to town, you have Dublin the week after, so it's huge, but they're great games to get.
Yeah.
And it's you know, we've often said there's a huge step up from County Championship to National League, and there's a step up into Championship. Yeah. And some of the younger fellas, they saw that the last night. Yeah. But that'll stand to them.
Yeah. Let's go through the game. First of all, anybody was there the last night, maybe you didn't see it on the television, but Liam, the weather conditions the league games, I mean, from the word go, these games don't start fair in a sense, because you have a gale of wind, and even the last night the wind wasn't even blowing straight down the field, it was more at a diagonal. And I suppose you're inside the dressing room then, Liam, does that change your game plan? I mean, the weather, I mean, obviously it has to mean, but I mean, you have a game plan where you're either going to kick it in where Kerry have seemed to favour kicking, and all of a sudden then the wind destroys that game on you, and then you're on the back foot.
Yeah, and for anyone that wasn't there, like, the wind really was, and it was unusual, because usually it's blowing down in towards the Horns end, it was blowing the opposite way, so it was suiting Derry. And you could see Kerry came out, and which I liked as well, is they had a bit of a game plan where we wanted to kick it into the full forward line. Shawnee Shea was inside, you know, a couple of high ones, but the wind was kind of tailing it a small bit. So I know the Kerry supporters, we were kind of itching a small bit that we were over and back to field and stuff like that, but conditions were tough in the
that
first half of
that. The game then, obviously. I mean, obviously, if the wind's blowing directly through, the ball goes straight, absolutely. But like you said, it was holding it up. I mean, it was, and holding it up in a way that it helps defenders rather than forwards.
And not only that, Derry kind of set up 15 men inside their 45.
Yeah.
You know, so it made it even harder again. You know, so, but we did punch a couple of holes, all right, at times. I liked it a bit more, that we had guys off the shoulder. But I suppose when you were playing against the breeze like that, you were kind of holding up the ball, running down the clock, hoping for that. But in the second half, we got, you know, we really got into it. But definitely the first half, a lot of people were saying Kerry were poor in the first half, and it wasn't so much Kerry were poor, it was just the conditions were tough.
Yeah, let's stay in the first half there for a second. I mean, Kerry opened brightly. I mean, to be fair to them, they were competitive. We got a couple of points taken easily enough. We ran into trouble then, John, where I suppose Oran Lynch, well-rehearsed move now at this stage, he comes out a goal, he blocks the space, he puts the squeeze on, and for the first time in a long time, we saw Shane Ryan under pressure with kickouts.
Yeah, and a very good point, Donald, because, like, I suppose the positioning of Oran Lynch, it was very cute what he did.
And it was up in the Kerry half-back line.
It was up in the Kerry half-back line.
Yeah.
Where you'll be going to, where Shane Ryan would be kicking it, that's gone.
Yeah.
Then you have to look where you, and he was actually kicking it out. He was forcing the kick then, being honest, and with the wind, like Liam said, I thought that his positioning was excellent. No, Lynch got caught, and it's always liable to happen. A keeper will get caught if you're continuously out there, but it's a tactic. But I would say as well, the tactics that Mickey Hart had the last night, I think it doesn't suit the way Derry play. Derry are a free-running team with a lot of pace. I think under Rory Gallagher and Kieran Myrna, you know,
they
expressed themselves, you know, when they have you have the forwards that they have, Glass and Rogers in the middle, McInnes coming from centre half back. I think he's kind of stimming in their game, because as you said, Liam, they're 15 behind the ball, like.
Mm-hmm.
And you're actually stopping a natural ability and a natural flow, and it could hinder them.
And what they do as well is, when you play 15 men, you're keeping the opposition in a game, because you're not going out punishing them.
Yeah, but that said, I mean, when they did break, I mean, they broke 100 miles an hour. I mean, they walked right through our defence or midfield. I mean, McInnes, Doherty, they just seem to know. They seem fitter. They seem faster. Are they maybe at a different level of where our training is?
Probably are, I'd say, game wise, because the McKenna Cup is probably more a competitive, you know, you're getting better games.
Yeah. They've got nothing off Donegal for free. I mean,
like our McGrath Cup is only kind of it's a competition where you go to kind of stretch the legs more than anything else, because even against Cork we had to make 11 changes, you know, so whereas in the McKenna Cup they were teams go out to really to win it. And I think that that's probably, they had that little slight edge. But at the same time, they didn't create too many goal chances.
No. Yeah.
No, so even though they were breaking us down to a certain point, no, I can't remember, was there any one-on-one with Shane, no, at any time? No, so that's another kind of positive.
They did, but they outscored us 15 scores to 10, like, I mean.
Well, they did, and at one stage they were in cruising. They were, yeah, they were in cruise control, all right.
They got. No. John, the diagonal ball, I mean, obviously teams are looking at ways of trying to break down the blanket. I mean, you either go through the blanket at speed with fellas running off the shoulder, which isn't all that easy when the weather conditions are. We did try an awful lot of kicks, diagonal kicks, Gavin White diagonal kick across. Maybe Sean O'Shea stayed inside looking for a lot of them. Again, the wind probably disrupted the game plan. But it seems to be something that we see a little bit more of in the last couple of games.
Yeah, I think the diagonal, like you said, the way of breaking them down is a good accurate ball in. We tried it last night, but the conditions, the wind, it wasn't conducive to that type of a ball. Just a few went out over the line, you know. Shane Ryan had one or two as well that went, yeah, remember, you know, Dara Mine, and it was just, it didn't stick. Mm-hmm. But it's great to see that, because, like, you know, with so many Derry players back, we had five or six defenders marking space, holding possession across the field. We couldn't shoot from distance because of the wind, into the wind. So it was frustrating. And then we forced the ball, I think, a few times, and it suited Derry. But I think down the road, that type of ball in, when you have Sean O'Shea and you have Clifford,
maybe
inside,
David Clifford in,
you
know, I think that's the road we're kind of looking at.
I think it is.
The tactic, yeah.
And as well as that, Liam, Paddy Clifford is one of the best distributors. And that will suit, that type of player will suit Paddy, delivering that diagonal ball in. That's one of his fortes, really.
Yeah. Half time, I mean, you're in the stand at half time, and Kerry Sports can be fairly unforgiving once.
mean, sure then.
to be fair, even the majority of people that were there, I mean, they weren't quite happy, to be fair about it, you know. Conditions, tactics, didn't matter. You're at home, you're trailing, you needed a big second half. Whatever was said in the second half, the sleeves were rolled up. Were you very pleased at the way Kerry came out the second half and approached the game?
I was, but that's going back to conditions again, because it enabled us to attack.
It was our turn,
and it was our turn to go at them, and Derry were finding it hard to get the ball from their kick out in as well, because if you look at our goals, the turnovers, they were because Derry couldn't kick it quick enough in another kind of way, to know. So yeah, look, this time of the year, January football, you are going to have to play the elements as well. But unfortunately, I just don't, you know, our goal chances that we missed, you know, kind of hurt us. It hurt us at the end. No, you could say people are talking about Stephen O'Brien's too, but that's just lack of games. No, I wouldn't call it. No, that's all it is. We've all seen it in the first game, even the county league match. Your first county league match. You'll be a bit rusty, you know, thinking wise. And I suppose he wanted to do the right thing, which was to pass it. But yeah, obviously, the right thing was to put it low, past the goalkeeper. But I guarantee you, he won't do that again. You know, so it's something that
we'll get on to them. Chris McCaig, of course, the fullback, had a great game. He gave an interview to Cathair Kane after the match, and his thoughts on it from a player's perspective. Obviously, we get the manager's perspective, and that, to be fair, is PR kind of jam jar. But this guy says, I thought tonight was a nice advertisement for what football can be played like. There were structured attacks and defences were there, a lot of kicking tonight and a lot of movement. The pace of that game, I thought, was very high and a fairly good game of football. I think football's fine if we embrace that it has changed. I think there's too many intricacies in the game that people are still catching on to, and I just don't think there's need for all the talk about rule changes. Now, he's obviously referring to the goalkeeper coming out of goal, and everybody wants the goalkeeper to stay in goal and no back passes and the whole lot. He's the fullback, John. He's playing the game. He sees no need for any changes. He's enjoying the way it is, and he uses the word structured. Structured attacks, structured defences. Are we getting to a stage, John, where we are structuring our players to play a structured game, and really eliminating the guy who might go on a solo run on his own and do something fantastic?
Yeah, I think we are. And, like, you know, from a player's point of view, the rule changes. We're changing rules at different times. And is there obviously there's thought put into it, but is it improving our game? Yeah. I don't think it is. Do you know? And like, it's you had two very good footballing sides out the last night. They wanted to play. that's, you know, these are easy games to ref. No matter what rules, players will adapt. But I think that the pace and the footballing that both teams had, you could see that. And there's going to be very little between those teams down the road. But I think that something that came through over the weekend was the standard of refereeing, and that's another story. I think the inconsistency and the lack of communication between the umpires and the referee, I think it's something, there's too much time and effort going into it. When you see umpires hesitating, and you've been an umpire, Liam, when you see an umpire hesitating, looking across at the other fella, the positional sense of them, and a few instances in the last few weeks we've seen it, you know, blatant mistakes made, it's not good enough. And I think, you know, that maybe that should be focused on more than changing the rules, because sometimes we change the rules, the kick out has to go so far, we have to do this, we can't, we have won so many men behind the ball, so we're going to have so many men up front. You know, teams, inter-county management teams, will come up with a remedy to the, and a solution to the problem that's created, no matter what's created. So I think that it's there's, when teams want to go out and play football, there's very little wrong with it. But if you want to be negative...
But it's all right for him now to be saying that when he has 14 fellas playing in front of him. No, he's not. He doesn't want a one-on-one situation as a fullback, so he'd like the rule to stay.
Yeah.
But it, I, for me, it doesn't conduce to good football, you know, when you have 15 men behind the ball. Because
well, what he's saying is that football has moved on. It's changed. I mean, get over it. With it. It's changed. It's not the way it used to be. We can't all play great football like John Kennedy done with the boys back in the 80s and all that. If it was great football at all, I mean, I wonder if we go back and watch it. I mean, there was an awful lot of it, and if you do go through the golden years, there's fantastic snippets. But I mean, I'd imagine, John, there was an awful lot of bad football played in between that too, was there?
There's no doubt. There was a lot of misplaced passes, a lot of poor play, and no matter what era you're in, you go through it and you'll see that, you know. And I think the levels of fitness and all that, it has evolved. And whether we like it or not, look, we all want to go to see a game where you have high scoring, you have one and one attacks and all that. But that's gone. You know, if you're a management team and you want to win, Mickey Hart wants to win All Ireland with Derry. Whatever it takes, he'll do that. If it means playing 15 behind the ball for 60 minutes and breaking up and getting enough scores to win it, so be it. It's all about bringing Sam home. And, you know, he's certainly under pressure to do it, because a lot of negativity from his own county in Tyrone, maybe even from Derry, maybe from Louth, we've heard a lot about it. But you have to give credit to the man. He's out there putting his neck on the line. He owes nothing to football, and he's gone in there. He wouldn't win with Derry unless he sees a chance of winning.
But I can't see him winning in Ireland playing Shane McGuigan back in the 13-yard line. It'd be like us playing David Clifford back in the full-back line. No. You're not going to do it.
Don't put a bad with no. You're only playing that out next Christmas. I don't see them winning all Ireland. Come here, let's go through some of the comments. We have a lot of comments here, and we'll go through some good, some bad, some pretty ugly as well. We'll fly through as many as we can, and thanks very much for your comments this evening. 0667123666 and 0833300300. Okay, let's go. We'll start with positives, if we can find a couple. Really disappointed with some of the players that were built up by the panel over the course of the championship. That's you guys, not me, obviously. It really does show that the gap is too high to surmount from county championship to inter-county.
There's a big gap there, but it's not. They just need time. Yeah. They're young fellas coming into a professional setup. This is the inter-county now is a professional setup. So they're walking into Cornhill's for the first time in the last couple of months behind. So it's going to take a bit of bedding. And then for your first game to meet Derry, if you were a midfielder and you were coming across Rodgers and Glass in the middle of the field.
Yeah. Well, in fairness, we've said that several times. And like, Jack has to try these guys. Yeah. You'll never know. And they will learn from it.
Yeah.
You'll never see a new guy coming in, rarely, getting a place in the team and keeping it.
Like I said, David Clifford, Colin Cooper.
Correct, they're exceptional. But in fairness to Jackie, he's given guys their chance. He's put him out with a fairly strong team. And as you said, Liam, if you were Sean O'Brien the last day, coming up against Brendan Rodgers and Glass, the best midfield pair in the country, he will learn from that. And, you know, Killian Buck the same. You know, the Gainies, they'll all learn from that. And they're not going to be dropped.
Yeah.
They mightn't be started the next day, but they're going to be brought on. It's a learning process.
And we need them to be improving.
We definitely do.
Guy made his debut in the championship in 92, midfield, straight into midfield he went.
Seamus Moynihan,
yeah. Lost the game, of course. Kerry fans went out that gate that night thinking, this guy ain't going to go nowhere, and he's one of our greatest footballers
same,
ever after.
My own club man, Seamus Cannon, I remember the first day he tagged out in the middle of the field for Kerry and coming off. And if you go down through, David Moran was another fella as well to start off. It's a hard position.
Mark O'Shea getting an awful run around as well.
So we have to be patient with these these guys, because they are going to offer us something.
Yeah, Dole, it was a good match to watch. I felt Kerry were a small bit rusty, but the foundations are definitely there, and I would still be hopeful. There you go, he's in your camp. Stephen O'Brien's missed goal chances were crucial in the outcome. Had we got a third goal, I felt we would have won, and even won by a good few points to spare. Kerry are not taking their points and easy scores again, very similar to last season. We kept on going for goals and getting turned over, so maybe a point or two there. Derry played well, and by playing their Glen players, they've shown that they really have no depth to their team, while Jack has plenty of winners to come back in. So that from that perspective, Kerry did pretty well. How about that argument, Liam? 13 of the 15 Derry boys who played in the semi-final last year played. The fact that he brought in three from the Glen pushed a couple of more fellas down off the bench. Maybe the depth isn't on the panel in Derry that we think.
Well, no, and like John said, and Mickey wants to lay down a marker, and our championship now is different to what it was 10 years ago. Like, we're out in April in the championship. Mm-hmm. No, so they're going to be out as well. So it's a very close season now. So teams want to get off on a good footing. They're after getting 2 points. Like we said, if we lose next weekend, there's even going to be more pressure on Jack, you know, for the Mayo game. You know, so, and it's all about maybe not having too much pressure on you early and get the fans off your back a small bit and let things breathe. You know, so, but look, it's it was a statement by Derry coming down with a full team the weekend.
And Derry needs to win too, because are they facing Tyrone next week?
Nice Tyrone next week. Yeah. So that's, yeah.
At least Mickey Hart has 2 points going there. Kerry could have won it, but Derry deserved it from the type of direct running football that they played. Really disappointed in the Kerry wing backs, who never showed for kickouts. It's easy to blame the goalkeeper, but when you have no option, all you have to do is fire down the middle. And then one before the break, they needed Dermot O'Connor to come in to settle the midfield. Yeah, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about it a little bit more as well after the next break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Loads of comments coming in, and we will go through as many as we can, and we have a lot of them. Now, there's a lot of praise for Dermot O'Connor getting on top at midfield. At that stage, Derry boys were truly spent. It was a lot harder for the starting midfielders. How about that point, I presume, Liam, as the game went on? You know, let's go back maybe and rewind it. You've been selected to play for Kerry. You're inside midfield. There's loads of rumours about all these players playing, not playing, and the whole lot. You come out, and all of a sudden, you're marking Brendan Rodgers and
Conor Glass.
Does your mindset change a little bit?
It probably does, really, yeah. Especially if you're a young fella.
Yeah.
But, look, I do think Conor...
What would the management say? Does the management have a role then and say, listen, guys...
Just go and play your game.
Is that it?
Yeah, that's mainly, yeah. You might have a few words to see, look, that Conor Glass is an attacking midfielder, and you might have to cover that. But I would agree with your listener that Conor did die after the first half, really.
Response, yeah.
He did, yeah. You could see that. And the Glen boys, you could see the three Glen boys really kind of struggled for the second half. But Brendan Rodgers is a machine, though, in fairness to him, as a midfielder.
Is it David Clifford?
But Dermot did. And to be honest, Barry Dan, I thought when he came on, the game kind of suited him as well. It settled them a small bit, but that shows that bit of experience as well that we're talking about. You know, they're around with a while. Barry Dan last year was getting game time, and I think that just shows that you have that little bit of confidence as well, that we're not just thrown in the deep end.
Mm-hmm. Don't, if we're looking for positives, take the Gainies, really showed that what they can match it up with the big boys. Graham Sullivan, not bad, or not for the first time, has shown that he's a real championship player. His kick passing was fantastic, and he took his mark well under pressure. The two Gainies first, Liam.
Yeah. Look, the season.
Looking for a bright spark.
We're looking for a bright spark. And I think we're always talking here.
The goal was taken very well.
Yeah, we're looking for forwards, natural scorers. And the Gainies are that. Mm-hmm. You know, and we've seen it with Dingle down through the years, not only last year. And they're going to be a real boost to us this year in the forward line. Because if we go back to our Ireland final last year, we just didn't have that spark either coming off the bench or anything. But now we have these guys thrown into the mix now as well, which would be a big addition to us. So yeah, the Drummond man was outstanding. He was man of the match in writing. Yeah, and maybe kind of, and I think you've said it a couple of times, that maybe you could play him in other positions as well.
Graham Sloan from midfield, I've been saying for the last 2 years.
Yeah, you're in fairness to him now,
nobody's listening.
His vision for the goal, Dolan, was brilliant.
Was
another player to get battled up, he turned back and gave it back out. Like.
And the mark that he got for equalising it as well and kicking over the bar.
But In saying that, I mean, he's getting to a stage now where, you know, he's not a young player anymore. He's gone. He had that great All Ireland against Galway. He's just a player who's showing up, playing to the standard which probably require off everybody.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
But like Liam said, look, he has the experience. He's been there. He's an All-Ireland under his belt. And he's a player of confidence. And he took the game to him the last day when it was needed. And you have to say that Dylan Casey finished the goal very well. Mm-hmm. You know, it was interesting that we two defenders above inside the 21-metre line.
And Jason Foley nearly got one as well.
Jason Foley nearly got one as well, yeah.
He was up there as well. Now, come here, a person who did come off the bench, of course, and scored 1-4, Louise Murray Hertig. She, of course, sprung from the bench. She helped guide Kerry to a home win over Waterford in round two of the Little Ladies National Football League yesterday. And it's a result that sees Kerry 2-2, top the league. And Dan Kearney, the Kerry men's Dan Kearney, even was at Fitzgerald Stadium. He joined us now on the line. Dan, whatever it is about Waterford, these wins are pretty tough to get, aren't they?
Oh yeah, they're a very tough, dogged outfit, Donal. You know, they're good footballers, you know. They're always going to be a sort of a top eight team in Ireland, I suppose, and they have been for a number of years now. So it was always going to be a tough test for Kerry. But I suppose when they introduced the substitutes and, you know, a lot of more familiar names, really kind of steadied the ship, so to speak, like after a fairly, you know, horrendous start to the game. Like, Kerry were two goals and a point down to no score after around 10 minutes. And, mm-hmm. you know, but look, in fairness to the girls that were on the field at the time, they did claw it back and they were level at halftime. But it was a tough start. But Waterford Raw is going to give you a tough game. They'll give any team in the country a tough game. So it was a win well earned by Kerry at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. Go back to the start. I mean, obviously Kerry are coming off the back of that fantastic win against Dublin. They're at home, they're in front of the fans, and all of a sudden Waterford put the ball in the net, then they put the ball in the net again. It shows a great sign of character of the team that they kind of swung themselves around. But Niamh Carmody was pivotal to that, I think, in the first half. I mean, she was kicking frees for fun as well.
Yeah, she was, yeah. And the thing about Niamh is, and again, it's kind of repeating herself, she covered every blade of grass on the field. Like, she was, mm-hmm. you know, she's absolutely flying at the moment. And the captaincy seems to really suit her because, you know, she's taking things by the scruff of the neck. And, you know, as good a kicker as she is, and she's a brilliant kicker, you know, kind of an outside at a right job, or, you know, she sees a pass inside, and she has done it numerous times. We saw it against Dublin when she fed Hannah Dunahoo with a lovely kick pass as well. I never expected her to be taking the frees.
I know, yeah.
When she did, yeah, you know, I didn't think that, okay, she was a good kicker, you know, in the middle of the game when the action was happening, like, but to steady herself and to take the frees. And they were difficult enough frees for a right-legged kicker, but she kicked all of them superbly. She kicked 4 points from frees in the game, and, of course, Louise came on then and took over the free-taking duties, like. But Carmody is pivotal, like, and she's an absolutely outstanding player. Again, that's two really good games in a row. Two games that I think she was man of the match yesterday, for sure, player of the match even, and she could have been player of the match against Dublin. She was that good as well, like. So she's a girl really on top of her form, and it's great to see even at this stage of the season, like, you know, because I mean, she's a back-to-back all-star, and she seems to be getting better by the day. So it's great to see it done.
Yeah, a couple of changes then, of course, and Kerry did go ahead, Daniel O'Leary putting him ahead, but Waterford weren't gone. Then they stood up. The goal that they had ruled out, fair call?
Yeah, it was a fair call. Yeah, I think there was no arguing with it, like. But you know what, all she had to do was punch the ball into the net. I don't know why she caught it. She kind of caught it and she threw it in. Like, yeah. I don't know what she was thinking. She probably got a rush of blood to the head. And she had got a goal earlier, that girl, Maureen
O'Brien. Maureen O'Brien, yeah.
You know, the funny thing about it is, if she had done the right thing and kind of punched it in, would have put Waterford 2 points up again, and you wouldn't know how it would have transpired after that. Like, you know, you just don't know the way a game is going to go. But as it was, the goal was disallowed. Kerry went on to score, I think it was 1-4 after that. Waterford scored a point mm-hmm. after that, and that was the end of the game. Like, you know, so that's the way, that swings and roundabouts, like, you know. But really and truly, that would have been a test for Kerry if that goal had gone in. You know, it would have put them, like I said, two points ahead, Waterford, with their tails up, and who knows what might have happened.
To have asked more questions, maybe. Come here, no questions asked, of course, if Louise Murray Hertig comes off the bench. She's player of the year. We've been seeing it for years here, how fantastic she is. But God, 1-4 in what? 9-10 minutes?
Yeah, it was. I think it was the 47 minutes she came on, and I think she got her goal in the 64th minute. And okay. Look, she just showed her ball. I must mention Danielle O'Leary in the same breath, because Danielle O'Leary came on and she really had an outstanding game as well, and they kind of combined well together. But your Louise is just something special. Like, and she kicked three frees, she kicked a beautiful point from play, and then the goal right at the death. It was an absolute beauty. Kerry pushed up on the Waterford kick-out, and when they did push up on the Waterford kick-out throughout the game, it paid dividends, and they pushed up yet again, got the ball. Danielle O'Leary inside to Louise. Now, she was kind of on the right hand side and she had a bit of work to do, like, and the goalie was off the line, but you know, a normal player or kind of an ordinary player probably would have taken her point, but she said, no, not a hope, I'm going to put it on the inside of my right, and she lobbed it over, a beautiful spin in it over the goalie's head into the back of the net. An absolutely fantastic goal from a special player.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it just shows she's back. Like, she says, I'm back in the field. I'm player of the year 2023. I'm far from finished. I'm
a massive hunger. I mean, particularly the way she came in and took the scores, and there was no missing. Come here.
There was one time, and Kerry, they were putting pressure on Waterford, and they turned over the ball. The Waterford girl travelled with it, and the next thing, Louise was there with the two fists, and she left the room and wrote it for her. And I said, holy God, even at this stage of the game, this girl is really, really up for it. And it showed me that the hunger is still there, Donald, for sure and certain.
Yeah, absolutely. They will need it, of course. We're discussing the men's. I suppose that every game that's coming is a difficult game for them. But the arrival of Cork on Bank Holiday Monday, it's a special game, and it's a game maybe for the first time in quite a long time that you will be going in saying, yeah, you know, this is ours to win.
Yeah, I would think so. I see no reason whatsoever why Kerry won't beat Cork the next day. Cork, they're struggling a small bit. Okay, they won the first day against Galway. They won 1-6 to 1-5. Now, that was in the middle of the storm, you know, and it was an awful game. But Cork pulled through there. But they'd only one score in that game, which was Katie Quirk.
Yeah,
and I suppose Armagh turned them over the last day by 2 points. I think it was 1-8 to 1-6. And again, Cork had just three scores. Quirk scored four. Derek Kiley got one. Sorry, O'Leary got a point. So they are finding it difficult to score. I mean, 1-6, an average of 1-6 in two games is pretty poor going by Cork standards. And I really think that they're missing the O'Sullivans. You know, they're kind of their leaders on the field and in the forward line. I think they're really missing them. And, you know, I expect Kerry to win the next day, no doubt about it. Now, Kerry again, the lads have said they're going to experiment again, and they're dead right. It's working really, really well for them. But I think it's a brilliant opportunity to turn over Cork inside Nostan Stack Park. And, you know, you're on 9 points, then you're safe, and you can do whatever you want then for the rest of the league. But definitely, I would fancy Kerry the next day against Cork.
Yeah, the 9 points is crucial in a sense, isn't it? Because for listeners, it's 3 points for a win in the ladies, two, of course, in the men. I don't know what that's about. But anyway, but once you get your two wins and get above your two wins, you're kind of safe, really. There's two going down now this year where there's normally kind of just one going down, and getting to nine. And then if you get to nine and get to 12 is an unusual number, because then you're within shouting distance of getting into a final nearly.
Well, you are, like, because if you beat Cork the next day, like you say, you're on 9 points. You have Mayo at home in 2 weeks after that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you'd fancy yourself against Mayo again. I mean, Kerry hammered them in the All-Ireland semi-final last year, you could say. So you'd fancy, like, and all of a sudden you're up to 12 points. Now, you have a couple of tough away games after that. I think you've Armagh and Meath away. So, you know, that can, but if you're up to 12 points, you'd fancy doing anything, like, you know. So, yeah, it's kind of one of those ones. You beat Cork the next day, you're on 9 points, and you're, you know, the lads, their stated goal was to stay in Division 1 this year, but I think they'd be looking at, we could do back-to-back here, we could go all the way, like, so, no, there's a long way to go. Yes, I mean, you have to turn over a Cork side coming to Street yet.
We haven't got those 9 points yet, I suppose. Come here to me, Meath in Dublin, always a special in the ladies. Meath overturning Dublin, bit of a shock?
No, I wouldn't say so. Like, I wouldn't say so. I mean, Meath have been there about the last few years. Like, I mean, they've won a couple of All-Irelands, and I suppose last year they were a bit of a transition as such.
They were on a bit down, maybe after, yeah.
Yeah, you know, that kind of stuff happens, and there's a couple of players gone away, like a couple of important players and that. So I wouldn't put it past Meath at all. Like, I mean, they're a top side. Dublin, we don't know what they're at the moment. I mean, Kerry turned them over as well. And you just don't know where Dublin are at or what they're trying to achieve at this stage. Like, but I mean, Dublin travelling to Navan, up to Meath, you know, Meath and Navan are a fairly far end of the side. And no, they were full value for that. Like, look, Meath are far from gone away. They're going to be contenders again this year, like, and they have that kind of resilience and that experience as well. So, you know, look out for them for the year ahead.
Absolutely. Bank Holiday Monday, that's when we're playing. Is it 3 o'clock?
3 o'clock. 3 o'clock, yeah, inside in Ossinstack Park. So, you know, look, wouldn't it be great if a crowd came out? It's a perfect day for it, like, and I remember the last time at the Sack Park there a couple of years ago. I think it was the Munster Championship. It was a fine crowd out, and it was a fantastic game of football. Mm-hmm. So it'd be great to see it again, like, and you know, the girls like we've always said on this show, Donald, the girls play a lovely brand of football, so it'd be great to get a crowd out and support them.
Yeah, absolutely. I saw a comment there actually, somebody decrying the disappointment of not having a huge crowd in Fitzgerald Stadium yesterday. Was it a bit slack, or was it?
Yeah,
it could have been better, maybe.
Do you know the funny thing about Fitzgerald? And I was looking over from the press box, and it looked like there was a small crowd, and it wasn't a big crowd by any manner of means. Like, it was a dirty old day as well. Like, and it was a pity there wasn't a bigger crowd. But the thing about Fitzgerald Stadium is, even if you have a good crowd, like, it looks small. You know. And it could have been bigger, there's no doubt about that. Like, and it'd be great if more people come out to support them.
Yeah,
but like I say, people get lost in Fitzgerald Stadium. It's so big, like, you know, kind of a reasonable enough crowd even looks smaller.
Sure, even Liam Brosnan can't find his way around Fitzgerald Stadium at the best of times. Come here, Dan. Listen, thanks very much, Dan. That, of course, is Dan Carney, and we're talking about the Kerry ladies, 2 wins from 2, and of course they are playing in Ossinstack Park on Bank Holiday Monday at 3 o'clock. And listen, there's a lot of us off on Bank Holiday Monday. Tralee is just down the road for most of us, and get home and give them support, because I mean, it isn't often that you're going to see top quality players playing on your doorstep. As often, there will be a handful of more league games, and they probably won't get that many championship games down here as well. So listen, get out and support the girls. For now, we take a break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Hi, Donald. Can Kerry afford to have the two Clifford brothers on the sideline in this competitive league? Patrick in Killarney. Hi, Donald. If anyone of the team that played in the All-Ireland who weren't tugged out were playing, we would have got the 2 points. Yeah, I suppose if we had a couple more players, that's Jonathan Currell. All as good and all to have football matches. It is not crazy to be playing National League and AIB club finals in January in atrocious weather, and then having no football from August onwards when the weather is decent. All senior matches seem to be crammed into 6 months. It's just madness. And that's Dan in Rathmore. And of course, that unfortunately, Dan, is the split season. That's what that brought us. It shoved everybody in. Hi lads, what do the panel think of Dublin Joe? A referee, he puts him behind as if no Kerry supporter knew who Dublin Joe was before that comment Saturday night. Tralee listener, Liam Brosnan, easy one for you to feel.
Easy one.
Yeah. Tim Moynihan thought he was very good.
A lot of the Kerry supporters underneath it were calling him Derry Joe Saturday night. He wasn't Dublin Joe at all. But yeah, I thought there was a lot of decisions that he was just making it very hard for anyone around him to understand what he was calling it for. You know, and now, even for the 2 Kerry goals, the Derry crowd were kind of even out about it. But no, he didn't cover himself with glory. You know, and like John said earlier, that the referees at the moment, I suppose, with the publicity of all this failing tests and this kind of, is not doing him any good either. But I still think, and I was glad to read it during the week, that this VAR system that might be coming in, I think that'd be a great thing in it for referees. But I can't understand.
Game would take about 6.5 hours. Then,
well, it doesn't matter. Get the decision right, because we're at a stage now where we have a Kerry team training 5 nights a week, we have a Derry team training 5 nights a week, and we have a referee.
It's an amateur sport.
In the middle. Yeah. It was an amateur sport. And we have one referee inside and try to manage the whole lot of it. He can't do it. Bring the 2 guys off the sideline, for God's sake, and throw them in and have 3 referees. We have it blowing the complex on a Saturday night. You go down, there's 3 referees in a National League basketball game. We can't do it at one of the biggest sports.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I think the umpires have to be looked at, Liam. Yeah. Look at the All-Ireland Club final in the hurling.
That's right, yeah.
I mean, to be fair, to Loughlin Gales, like, yeah. There's no excuse for that. A player, one of the Burks, was 2 or 3 feet over the line with the ball, and the man was standing there and he couldn't see it. I mean, there's no excuse for that.
And John, above in Crow Park, there could be 12 or 13 fellas wired up.
Yeah.
And that's what's up there. Yeah. Yeah. Between the umpire's sideline and all these people, they're all wired up. It would take 10 seconds to look at that on the screen and say X, Y, and Z and get it. And same with red cards and stuff like that. Big decisions for big games need to be got right. And I think that we're coming to a stage now where I think county boards are going to push it, because we're Kerry are spending 1 point something million to train their Kerry teams, and you want the referee then to make probably not his fault, but make a decision that could cost you an All Ireland.
We couldn't win a breaking ball at midfield, lads. God be with the days when Daryl O'Shea would just go up and collect it. We're far from Daryl O'Shea days, aren't we? And of course the game has moved on. We simply messed up all the big plays, Donal. I suppose you're referring to the goal chances, obviously. I'd imagine that. Commentator from 5 points down to get level shows a bit of spirit, especially without the Cliffords. We should not have lost, however, when we got level. Again, we left Derry player walk down the pitch. Our defence needs to be looked at for their performances, John.
Yeah, there's, look, it's it was evident the last night, Donald, but you have to look at the positives. We were well beaten in the first half, as we said earlier on. But the second half, we came out, we took the game on to them. Jack made a few switches. They worked. You know, we were back in the game. It's the first round of the league. You're against a very strong Derry team with an intent, and I think we learned a lot from it. And you know, we'll put that into use going up to Clonus next weekend. The manner in which we played in the second half, that we took the game onto them, we had the leaders out there. You know, the Graham O'Sullivans. You know, the Joe Connor did quite well. Dermot O'Connor, Barry Dan. You know, Sean O'Shea.
Sean O'Shea's moving well.
Yeah, moving very well. A lot of positives. The two again, he's added a bit of pace to it.
Yeah.
You know, Dylan didn't hesitate when he got the chance. It was an easy one from people up in the stand. Say, oh, sure, it was an easy finish. But he still had to put it away, like, you know. And I think that there was a lot of positives. Disappointing to lose. But look, first round, 2 points gone, we move on.
Yeah. Let's wrap it up before we move on to the Monaghan one. And I'm trying to find a positive comment on this sheet. I'd say that, to be fair, I think people are a bit harsh maybe on some of the players. We won't read out individual names, obviously, of the players. I don't think it's fair. That goes back to it being an amateur sport, even though Liam Brosson thinks it's professional. David Clifford to come back in, along with Paddy, put Dermot into midfield and add the Gaines, and things won't look so bad. How about that?
Yeah, there's a lot of patterns there. Sean O'Shea is moving well. Mm-hmm. Don't know if this time you can move Sean out there. No, Joe O'Connor seems to be a man with more ex. You know, the more games he bet, the more games he gets, I think he'd be a big option
coming
there.
In a whole stack full of Monaghan. The Cliffords play the next day against Monaghan. Now Jack has ruled them out until round 3. I mean, obviously, I don't know whether they need have a bit of a niggle, or whether they are need just a bit of time, or whether they're just need to recharge the batteries or whatever it is, or they have came back maybe a bit later or whatever it is. But Jack, as the last press conference said, they weren't coming till the Mayo game. So if you think about it, we have Monaghan next week, we have a week off, and then we have the Mayo game, so that's 3 weeks more to get in. Would you be surprised, Liam Brosnan, to see the Cliffords?
Not one bit. And I think the result with Monaghan and Dublin the weekend, probably after maybe changing the thinking a small bit, because we want to stay playing Division 1 football. We lose next weekend, the heat comes on. We've Mayo down and then the following week. No, so there's a bit of pressure, whereas if you're sitting down at the start of the year, and if myself and John were part of the management team, you'd be kind of penciling the Monaghan game as an away game that you could pick up a couple of points. And I think Jack will be doing that as well. So I wouldn't be one bit surprised if we saw the two Cliffords togging out next weekend. And knowing the two boys, I think they'll probably want to tog out, because I know they're back training and I think they'll be eager to get back in.
Last time, Liam Brosnan, we lost to Derry at home in a league, 2014.
Well, then that's John Kennedy. He's probably back in his era, isn't he?
He knows the answer to these guys,
he's probably back in the 80s.
Two Kerry players from 2014.
Was it two?
Two Kerry players. They were on the field in 2014 when we lost, and they were on again the last night. Stay away from your programme now, John, will you? God help us. Ah, come on, Liam.
Yeah. 10 years ago.
I know, sure, it's only around the corner, 10 years ago, and that long. Are you saying the fellas that played 10 years ago are old now, is it?
Every lot of these guys, a lot of young guys. Did they start on the Kerry team the weekend?
One came on at half-time. That should narrow it down for you. Well, actually, both of them came on as subs. Bottom came on as subs.
Stephen O'Brien.
That's one, yeah.
And Dermot O'Connor.
Paul Murphy.
Sir Damien O'Connor was probably about 4 years old in
2014. 10 years ago. He's not that young.
Not that good. Okay, let's talk about the black card. A lot of comments in very quickly on the black card. And the time wasting involved in the black card, John, we saw it again the last night. There you get a black card, lo and behold, sure, it only took about 2 minutes before something had a blow to the head and he was on the floor for about 3 minutes taking it off. Something has to be changed on that, surely.
Yeah, it's a common denominator, no, Donald, when you get a black card. You're down. Next play, fella goes down.
And they don't just go down for 30 seconds and tie the shoelaces.
It's defeating the purpose, you know, and it's killing the game. And every team is at it. It's not alone, Derry.
Should there be a bigger crime for the black card? As in, like, I saw there on Twitter, give some guy a match suspension for a black card.
I don't know about the crime, but like you said there, like, it's very easy to stop the clock. So now we're on about changing the rules, but why are we changing all the rules? Like, we won't change the simple things. Stop the clock. If a fella goes on, and if it was Joe himself that actually was hopping the ball and he held it for 2 or 3 minutes, whatever was going on, like, you should be able to stop our clock. Because that was suiting Derry down to the ground.
Of course.
Yeah. Even the kick-outs with the goalkeeper.
Now, to be fair, I would imagine, and I'm not blaming Derry for it, I mean, if it happened with a Kerry fella at this stage, we were nearly training.
And you'd be encouraging
it. You'd be saying, we need something to pull a hamstring for a couple of seconds and go down and kill it. But it's destroying our game, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And you could see Derry, and everyone was kind of roaring the Mickey Hart, the black hearts again, they're back and all this kind of stuff. Yeah. It was funny, but you know, when you look at it, like Chrissy McHague said about the rules, and that's the way football has gone. But it's not nice. Yeah. You know, these things aren't. No, at times, if you saw Kerry boys doing what the Derry boys were doing the weekend, you'd be kind of half embarrassed a small bit at some of the things that were going on. But the black
would
guard,
that embarrassment leave you in 15 seconds if it had the desired results of wearing down the clock and getting David Clifford back on again to kick the next four scores?
See, that's what it's all about.
It's all about winning. It's all about money. One of the big news pieces, not this week, but obviously last week, we have in, is the naming of grounds, John. Mm-hmm. Obviously Bernard Casey gets the gold medal for Austin Snack Park, which is pretty cool.
You have a big one now coming. I think it's going to be announced next week.
John Kennedy Park, isn't that John Kennedy Park already? No,
no,
I heard he was overlooked for the Legend soccer team, actually. John Kennedy,
and the boot spot and everything.
Leading scorer for ST, was it United or ST City?
We're looking at Ivan outside. We're disappointed that the Legends went.
Just as bad for Morris Fish Pest showed.
In fairness, it's a very good cause, you know, on a serious note. Yeah. Very good cause, and hope that there'll be a big crowd at it, because, you know, that's reality, mm-hmm. to be fair.
And we'd be worried about small things.
Exactly,
Go back to Páirc Uí Chaoimh. I saw a guy there shouting at the week saying, if people were really serious about Páirc Uí Chaoimh, surely 1,000 people would give €1,000 to keep the name there.
Good point.
Would they?
Yeah.
Well, the answer is no, they wouldn't, obviously. Can the GAA really, John, afford to not take money from sponsors?
I don't think so, Donald. You know, there's huge money involved in preparing teams now. You know, Páirc Uí Chaoimh is a super stadium, but it comes at a cost. And, you know, there'll be something similar in Fitzgerald Stadium, I presume. Maybe not to the same extent, but when you spend money, it's difficult to collect. You know, clubs are working now on pitches and on grounds, and they're developing their facilities. It's all money. So, you know, I think if you get a donation like that, you don't turn it away. Like the game, we have to move with the times, and, you know, maybe incorporate.
Yeah, incorporate the names.
Every Cork supporter was always forever more going to call it Páirc Uí Chaoimh regardless, and it was going to be known as Super Value Páirc Uí Chaoimh or Super Value Park or whatever it was. But we are looking at that reality, Liam. I mean, Fitzgerald Stadium are looking to do up their premises and the whole lot in a number of years' time. They have a huge project in. They're looking for a lot of money, government dependent. Obviously, they go back to the community looking to collect a bit more money as well. Something like this is possible to be on the table.
Oh, it is. Look, and as supporters, I have often listened to Radio Kerry where supporters rang in about the toilets aren't good enough and everything. You need money to get all these things right, and that's what the county boards are looking at for this. Now, like it or don't like it, that's the way the world has gone now. No, it's things don't run on fresh air anymore, and even running Kerry teams from minors all the way up both codes, it costs big money. Yeah.
And like Liam, people out there, I saw comments about relation to Cork last week about where's all the money in the GA going. We've been involved in teams, but as players and management, the amount of money that's been spent in preparing the teams, meals, medical facilities, expenses, having a doctor, having physios present, all that, you know, overnights in hotels.
And they're all things that are only fair to give players.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, if you tie out for Kerry, you should have a doctor, you should have a physio, you should have the best food, or you should have the best.
And to be fair to the Kerry County Board, you know, I've never heard the Kerry player giving out about what's being done. And likewise, in other counties, we never hear it. Maybe exceptional circumstances, but the money's been spent, it might be coming in through the turnstiles, but it's certainly going out again. And the people that haven't been involved, it is easy to be critical and say, where's the money going? But it is being put back into the teams.
There's no need for you to stand beside a washing machine anymore, John, is there?
No need anymore, Donald.
No. Did that really happen, did it?
Did.
All right, well, we'll talk about that the next time. He was trying to put something into it. We'll talk about that the next time because we're running out of time, lads. 20 seconds, Liam. Can we go to Monaghan and get a result?
Based on
what you've seen.
We can go to Monaghan and get a result, but it's going to be tough.
Is that a yes or a no?
Yes, we can get a result. I think this game...
We'll win by 6 points.
We won't win by 6 points.
We'll
so win I'll
by
be a lot closer. I'd be happy with a three-point win.
Three-point win. Yeah. John Kennedy?
It's going to be a difficult match. Vinnie Corey has a lot of young fellas.
Will we win?
I think we will.
Okay.
But we might have to beef up that squad.
Will we have to get the Cliffords out?
Yeah. I'll be bringing them anyway. Okay. I know when I drive, I'll take them.
Yourself and Timmy, Ambrose and the two Cliffords in the back seat. Listen, we go to news.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, 8 p.m.
Hi Donal, any young player needs time and you can't judge a young player in one game, they'll learn and improve. Absolutely right, Charles. Graham O'Sullivan had a great game, well done from South Kerry. And I think, next comment is, I think it's a given now that opposing teams are running at Kerry through the middle as they see that as our weakness. Tom Sullivan struggled at six. Jack and co will need to look at a stronger six going forward. Conor Gainey done well and will be a big player going forward. Joe Connor likewise. Dermot O'Connor made a huge impact when introduced and Derry deserved to win, but I think if teams press them up they are shaky. Absolutely, once we did put a press on Derry we did got a couple of scores off them. Good fight back against a strong Derry outfit. Plenty of positives to take for Jack. Two early lads to worry about the first half deficiencies. Absolutely. And then the last one we'll end on is nothing is won in January. There you go, nothing is won in January, apart from the 2 points that we left behind us the last night. Now, former All-Star forward with Kerry, of course, Sarah Hoolan. She's an SNA back in Quilna National School and she's decided to run a full marathon for the children to support, I think, the building of classes back there in Quilna, she'll tell us. And she'll be taking on the challenge on February the 9th, which is a Friday, leaving Quilna School. Sarah Hoolan, when you decided to retire from inter-county footballer, I didn't peg you down as a marathon runner.
Yeah, I didn't myself either, Donald, to be honest. But yeah, look, here I am now, so I'm looking forward to the next week and a half, getting another bit of training in, and hitting the road on the 9th of February.
Yeah, absolutely. Come here, speak to us about the cause, first of all, because it's a very worthy cause, and it's for the school back there, back in Quilna National School, which is nestled in there between Beaufort and on the way to Killorgan, I suppose, and the mountain behind you, and you've done low on the other side of you and all that. Tell us about what you're doing it for, first of all, and then we'll get into how you're preparing for it.
Yeah, I suppose this year is my first year working in the AC classroom in Cullina, and I suppose it all came about last September when the children had gone home and the class teacher, Lorraine Coonahan, and another SNA in the classroom, Sarah Keller, and myself were just sitting down chatting, and we just spoke about briefly how, you know, these children deserve so many opportunities and, you know, how we'd love to be able to pave the way for them to get these opportunities. And I suppose we all know the expense of all these outings and all this. So we just kind of, we went away and I suppose we did a little bit of brainstorming and we came back and I decided I'd run a marathon for not just the senior AC room but for the junior so that these children can, I suppose, reach their full potential and that we can help them to get, you know, I suppose, enjoy all these outings. You know, there's a lot of learning to be done in school, but there's more learning outside of the four walls of a classroom, I suppose, and there's a big world out there, and we just want to help them and give them all the opportunities to help them experience this big world and, you know, help them along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is important. It's like you said, I mean, the classroom is great and the whole lot, but there's a lot to be learned outside the walls as well. And this money that you're raising will go through that and providing the trips and I suppose, you know, it's providing extra social outings and communication comes with that, and, you know, it's all part of learning, and I suppose a lot of the children that are inside there need to learn, I suppose, maybe in different ways as well, and all this is what's needed and what's helped. It's great though to think that staff will put this on their own back and say, listen, we'll do this for ourselves and we'll do this to help. There must be a great kind of community bond within the school.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I suppose, first and foremost, a fundraiser like this doesn't just come about overnight. You know, there's a lot of work has gone in behind the scenes, and I suppose a lot of praise has to go to the class teacher, Lorraine Coonahan. She's an absolute powerhouse behind it all. We've coming up with the ideas. You know, she's just, what she brings to the school and to the AC rooms is just phenomenal. And I suppose another powerhouse in our staff is Mary Carol O'Sullivan. She took on the media role, and I suppose, you know, you can come up with all these ideas and you can say you're going to do this, but unless you get it out there to the public, you know, it mightn't take off. And God, she really helped it take off. And, you know, she hit the media for us, and we have another staff member, Thomas Strachan, SNA, you know, he done all these fabulous videos. I know, I suppose people can see them all over social media, but, you know, you might see them on social media today, but they're memories for families to have. Mm-hmm. For a lifetime, to see, you know, their children in the classrooms and the work they're going in and the enjoyment they're getting. But our staff has been unbelievable. I can't praise them enough for each single member staff has rode in behind this fundraiser, and, you know, there's no stone left unturned, and anything we ask them to do, you know, they're there, they're willing, and everyone's rowing in. And you might be thinking of something and you might have it said, and someone already has that job done for you. So, you know, it's an incredible staff in Cullinan, and, you know, we're so thankful that, you know, it's all the staff that's pushing this, and, yeah, you know, it's for the children, I think.
And yes, behind it all, Sarah Hoolan, they want you to run the 26 miles, is it?
Yeah, small job to do at the end, yeah.
Just get it in. Come here, talk to us about, obviously you retired with Kerry. I mean, were you looking for something to kind of fill that void? Did you go back automatically running or jogging or whatever, just to keep fit and keep going? Or is this just something that you decided, yeah, sure, why not, we'll have a go at it?
No, I suppose, you know, look, when you're playing any, I suppose, sport, it's a big commitment, you know, and when you step away from it, then there is a void there. And I suppose for a long time I was trying to fill that void, and I suppose I did keep tipping away with training, you know, be it gym work or running, and I was just, I suppose, running away here and there, and I had done a few runs, but no, when this came about, you know, it's a challenge for me too, and, you know, I said, why not, like, why not go for it? So, yeah, that's how I'm filling my time at the minute. I suppose people see me on the roads, they now realise why I'm on the road so much,
You're spending all your evenings. Come here to me, how much training have you done to get yourself up and ready? I presume you have the miles in the bank. I mean, you're not going to break down on mile number 18 or 19. You have it done, you're ahead, you ran all the miles and the whole lot, maybe just hoping for a bit of fine weather on the day, maybe.
Yeah, I suppose, look, you have to put in the training, I suppose, to ensure that you get around, but I suppose you do go out and have to put the long runs in, but I've been doing a bit of gym work as well, and I've been going to Sean Kelleher in Beaufort, and, you know, from the minute we came up with this fundraiser, I had just said to Sean, like, look, this is what I'm thinking of doing in a couple of months, and, you know, he has aimed my training towards that as well, so, you know, there's a lot of work gone in, but, you know, like, people have been fantastic, and, you know, anything I needed, any days I needed to ease back or do something more, you know, Sean was there, great to row in and help me in that way. So, yeah, I think I'm ready, and I'm looking forward to the 9th of February now to get going.
Super. And, of course, you're not going to Dublin to run it, you're going to run it locally. Are you leaving from the school, is it?
Yeah, so I suppose I wanted to kind of keep this, I suppose, tie-in in with the school, and, you know, we've such fabulous children within our school from junior infants all the way up to sixth class, so I wanted them all to be part of this as well. So I'm actually going to leave the school at 9:15, so the children, I suppose, will wave me off and say a few prayers to me, but I'll head towards Killarney, into the National Park, and head out towards Cardiff and towards Miles, but I think it's actually fabulous that some of the classes are actually being bused to locations along the route for water stops and a bit of support. So, you know, it's lovely that while I'll be running, you know, the school will be there with me along the way. And when I get back towards Beaufort then in the village, just coming up, I think a K from the school, students from the older classes will run half the last leg with me, and they'll slot out, and the children from the junior in the ASD, in the senior ASD rooms will join me, and we'll finish the last leg of the marathon together.
My God, in a record time of under 2 hours.
Unless I get a lift, I doubt it.
Good stuff. Well, if you are stuck for a lift, give a call. Come here, listen, Sarah Hoolan, wish you the very, very best of luck. It's for a fantastic cause, a unique cause as well. And I suppose, you know, as I said at the start, Sarah, I mean, it's great to give back to your workplace, but I mean, you're an SNA there in Quinlan National School, and the ASD units in Quinlan, other schools as well around the county, they're very important parts of the school. They're very important part for the integration of the kids into the school as well. And it's great for them to be out front and centre as well. And obviously, hopefully, you'll raise buckets and buckets of money, and you'll be out every second week. Getting buses will probably be your next tough job after that, but once you have a few bob in the bank. Very important question, how can I give you a few bob?
Yeah, so we set up an iDonate link. It can be found online on our school Instagram or Facebook page. And you know, I think it's everyone is promoting it, and the local papers and Clarny Advertiser, everybody. So, you know, you don't have to look too far for the link, but we'd be so grateful if anyone could just pop in any few euro, you know, a euro to 5 euro, anything goes a long way. So to anyone that has supported us so far, we're just so, so grateful and thankful. And, you know, we've been blown away so far, but there's a week and a half to go yet, so we just want to give it one final good push. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's for these amazing children and to give them so many opportunities. So I just ask anyone if they could help us at all, just to pop into the link, the iDonate link, and support us that way.
Absolutely. Listen, Sarah Hoolan, thanks very much. We appreciate you for joining us this evening. We'll take a break.
Tara's Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now, the Clarny Rugby under 18 and a half through 18.5 says Gas Girls advanced to the Munster League final, where they play Ennis. And of course, it is on February the 10th in Musgrave Park. Very, very quickly. It was the third, of course. We scratched that out. Delighted to talk to Dermot O'Malley. He's the co-coach. We have Elliot Donohoe joining us. We have Ella Gearan Crowley, and we have Fia Whelan as well. Great to see all back in action. Dermot, this is becoming kind of an annual visit to Terrace Talk. I mean, you're getting to so many finals. This team of girls have really come along from the baby stages all the way up, and we're really following their progress, aren't we?
Yeah, they have actually. It's not quite annual. Last year we got to two semi-finals. They got beaten in two semi-finals. But the previous year, when we were under 16s, we won the Munster League and Cup. And ironically enough, we actually played Ennis in the league final, which would be the similar team that we'll be playing on the 10th of February. The girls have really, really progressed and brought their quality of rugby up a good few notches up in those 2 years. Look, incredibly committed bunch of girls and always wanting to learn, which is absolutely joy to coach.
Mm-hmm. And that's the key really, isn't it? When it becomes a joy to coach, it becomes enjoyment to go there, it becomes enjoyment to share in the results, the good and maybe not the so good at times. And you're following the pathway of players, and you're seeing them develop from the skills of very basic where you show them at the start to getting to a level now where they're competing at under 18 and a half. And the other side of that, of course, is they're competing at the highest level within the province.
Yeah, I know. We have a number of girls kind of the team, and it's growing the whole time. And even this year was really interesting. We've got an influx of new girls from Listowel and Tralee and other areas, and they've come in and driven our quality up as well. They've started in places like Listowel from a younger age, and they just don't have the number of girls at under 18, so that's why they've come in and joined and become a part of us. With the girls have really welcome open arms for these girls, and they've added that value, and quality has gone up from the introduction of these girls, which is just exactly what we wanted to see, you know. Mm-hmm. and it's brilliant.
Fia, it must get easier and easier to captain them, is it?
Well, there's two of us at it now, so I suppose it's half the work.
Yeah.
But yeah,
you've been there from the start, haven't you?
Yeah.
I mean, if you chart your journey back from the very first day you went through or somebody handed you a rugby ball to where you are now, I mean, it's been a very positive journey. It's been a very structured journey, maybe in the sense as well. But you can see yourself developing and getting better and getting closer maybe to something really special at the end of the line.
Yes, well, hopefully. I suppose I've had a ball in my hand since I could walk, but I've come up to Clorglan Minis up... joined Clan in under-14s, and I've played with the same core group of girls up since. So I suppose just in that sense, just to grow with that kind of, that team has been really great.
Mm-hmm. Speak to us about the journey to the final. Real tough game against Clonakilty.
Yes. We went back down. We lost to them in the league just during our group stage games.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously there was a little bit of hurt for that, so we came back up firing. The game, I suppose, was really tough. The girls really had to dig deep just because, I mean, weather conditions were treacherous.
Yeah.
So it was really tough in that sense. And the low-scoring game, they really had to dig deep to get those final points
those
to get
us over. Those low-scoring games, people will look at those low-scoring games and say, God, that was the result, 7-3, whatever, not much action went on. But in rugby, it's completely the opposite. I mean, the amount of action that goes on, even the keeper score, because defences are on top. I mean, there's limited enough, I suppose, chances for forwards and backs maybe at that stage. And the games, the teams kind of contain themselves maybe a bit more. So it takes a team a little bit more teamwork to get over the line in these results.
Yeah, definitely. I think our only score came from phases and phases and phases of attack. And just keeping the ball safe, and we finally got the reward for it. But I suppose that game really was the two teams' defence was next level.
Yeah, and it's good. Ellie, looking forward to a Munster final?
Absolutely, and as Fia and Dermot were saying, it's an amazing group of girls. You wouldn't want to be going into a final with any other team, and there's just great atmosphere at all the trainings, and there's a big hype for it, so can't wait.
The family are mad about it, are they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Buying tickets by the book with loads.
Yes. We've loads of supporters coming with us, so big excitement.
Yeah. Speak to us about your journey into rugby. I mean, you obviously went home someday and saw a pamphlet or a leaflet or something that says, Mom, I want to play rugby. And
yes.
She probably said, Dear God, can you not play with something else or can you not stay with the Crokes or something? But speak to us about that journey for you, I mean, when you started rugby and where you came along.
So it was kind of like a random day at home, and I was just doing football and I wanted to join another sport, and it was actually an ad in the Advertiser, and I was like, you know, I'll just go up and see, do I like it? And I got the warmest welcome by both the coaches, Dermot and Josh, and the girls were amazing. And even to this day, there's, you know, might be a cold wet evening going up to training, but with the gang that you're with, it's a great atmosphere.
What made it different? How was the special welcome? I mean, obviously it's a sport you never played before. I mean, you obviously knew in your head the rules, and obviously mm-hmm. pass the ball back or whatever, and you might get a hit or the whole lot. I mean, what were those early training sessions like, kind of getting up to the speed of the sport?
I guess what made it the big welcome was when you're new to a sport, you know, you don't understand everything, and I was never afraid to ask a question. If I didn't understand something, you know, you got it explained to you very well, and they were very welcoming in the sense that if you maybe were making mistakes, you weren't, you know, given out or made feel bad for that. You were just thwarted, and yeah, that was what made it the extra special welcome.
Yeah. Another player here this evening, of course, is Ella Geeran Crowley, all the way from Kinnegwilla. You're very welcome. Ella, talk to us about your journey in.
Well, I guess I was very sporty from the age of 5 up, like, and I played the football, Jay, and basketball too. And I really wasn't familiar with rugby until I was like 11 or 12 on like the odd Saturdays. I'd go up to my nan's and my auntie Lane would be watching the rugby.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd be roped into sitting down watching it anyway. And she'd be explaining it away to me, and I kind of had an interest in it. And of course, yeah, as Ali said, Mom saw the ads in the Advertiser first, like, give it a go for girls rugby. And sure, she was like, oh, we'll, you know, send her off. Like, I always used to be called a wrecker anyway when I was younger, so they were like, we'll put her into this sport, see what she'll do. And once I got there, on me, like, I pulled up with the football gloves. I had no clue at all. Like, I quickly hid them anyway. And from there, I didn't really look back. Then, like, I just loved it. The girls, so welcoming. Like, you wouldn't be scared to ask any questions or anything. There was no judging. And the mentors, they're just fabulous in the rugby club.
So your whole family is delighted with you now?
Oh, they're a bit scared for me though, but they're delighted.
As long as you come home every evening.
Yeah.
Good stuff, fair play. Dermot, obviously as you've seen with the girls, I mean, they've all come from different backgrounds, they've all started life a different way. Some of them probably loved rugby at the start, some didn't know it existed at all, some out in Guinea got pushed in by the family because they obviously thought they'd be good at it. There seems to be a good home for all sorts of players in rugby.
There is. I think, look, it's from dock to docker, they say in Limerick, and it's very, very, very true. You know, it's all, and down here in Kerry, it's obviously football is religion down here, like rugby is religion in Limerick. And I think what's different is the contrasting stories from the different girls. And look, it's the skill set, it can be used, and I think it's very complementary as well. Like, most of these girls will continue to play their Gaelic football, and we'll only encourage all of that because they both complement each other, whether it's football or soccer or basketball. You know, it's that hand-eye coordination and the skill set, but most importantly, especially for girls, is kind of just to be playing and to be part of a team and to get all the benefits of being part of a team and the camaraderie and the friends for life. And that's kind of the most important element, and gluing all together, that all together is kind of very much aligned with our rugby ethos as a club and what we try to achieve. And it's, all sports are different, but you know, still they've got to enjoy it, and that's the most important thing.
Absolutely. We'll be talking about another important thing after a break, and of course, that's the final.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now we're here chatting to the Killarney Rugby ladies under 18 and a half team. They're here, of course, in preparation for their Munster League final, which is on the 10th of February above in Musgrave Park. And of course, they're taking on Ennis, and a team they kind of know well. You know Ennis well, don't you, Fia?
Yes, we do. We've played them up through the years, I suppose. I guess the rivalry really grew in that under 16 season. We had them in a final, we had them in a semi. And I suppose when you come up against the same team in such such important games, obviously you get to know them and you get to know.
Mm-hmm. And there's little enough between you, to be fair, isn't there? I mean, there's obviously certain teams will follow you all the way through from 14 all the way up and into senior and the whole lot. And Ennis just seems to be one of those.
Yeah, well, I suppose we're unlucky. We're lucky in the fact that no matter what age group we are, they always seem to follow up and they give us just as good as a game every time.
Yeah, absolutely. Darren, I'll go back to you for a second. I mean, obviously we're talking about the final and getting there, but obviously there's a huge journey for these girls that they can explore, because once the club is over, you still play with the club, there's the Munster aspect to it, there's the Irish aspect to it. You have three girls on the Munster panel? Or?
We have three girls on the Munster panel, and they have their Provincials coming up on the 15th against Leinster, 15th of February, and then the 18th they've got the interprovincial final, and the girls have been kind of training throughout the season for that, and it's ramping up now with intensity, kind of, and making a journey to yesterday to spend the full day in Clonakilty with a squad session, which is great for the girls because there's a bunch, about 30 girls in that squad, and it's great for their development and to have the Munster resources and coaching behind that effort, and improving those girls is beneficial to all the clubs, but also more importantly beneficial to each of the players as well.
Mm-hmm. And of course one of those players is Fia here, isn't she? She's very modest altogether. Fia, what's it like to kind of go into those training squads? I mean, obviously you step away, the camaraderie I'd imagine that's in the rugby community exists there as well, but it is a bit different.
Yeah, it definitely follows through. The girls in the squads are great. I suppose as you go up the levels the intensity grows, but I think that once you're matching that intensity, it's really, I love the opportunity just to push myself more and more, just the upper intensity that comes with such squads.
And when you're there, you're wearing your Killarney kind of jersey or crest or bag or the whole lot, are people looking at you and saying, God, really, there's rugby in Killarney?
Yes, so I like to pair my Killarney and Clorglan gear together, just to really rep the county. But yeah, I suppose people seem to be noticing us a bit more, though. You know, they might see a Killarney crest and they used to maybe not recognise it so much, but now you get a few looks for it.
Absolutely. Come here. obviously following the sport, and it was actually Ella referenced it, actually. You watched it on telly. I mean, obviously, it had a huge impact on your life because you got skated out the door because you were watching it so often. But obviously, we'll go back to the women's sevens. Fantastic result at the weekend. Are you guys glued to that on telly? Are you watching it? Are you saying, God, this is great, and the whole lot? Are you going to school the next day then and people are saying, was that a football match? Was that this?
Yeah, we are. I've been watching it myself, like, because, Jesus, the women's rugby is fairly good now, to be honest, like, but we'd be going to school the next day, sure, nobody would know, and really in the middle of nowhere in Ratmore, not a big rugby, like, place where rugby's, like, big, you know, but it's really, like, inspires me, because, like, yeah, women's rugby has come up so much in the past few years, and thankfully it has, because it's giving us a lot of opportunities, as we can see.
Yeah. And of course, Ellie, I mean, like, that's a great point by Ellie, actually, the opportunities and the whole lot. My God, she's playing a blinder tonight, huh? Half as good as Robbie was flying. But Ellie, the side of it that you look at it and you're looking at your heroes, I mean, you're looking into sevens rugby girls, I mean, you know names out of that that most people don't know, but you're watching them, you're looking at them. They're in the Olympics now. They're at a level that they're the highest level in the world. I mean, they won the sevens at the elite level. It wasn't the case that they were the fourth division, the third division, the second division. I mean, that surely must be quite inspiring.
Absolutely. They're a huge inspiration as a team. And I think that they're proving to everyone that no matter what the sport is and maybe the support behind the sport, you can achieve amazing things. And I think it's a great achievement to show maybe younger girls who are like, oh, should I join the sport? Absolutely do. And there's, you know, a never-ending opportunities with rugby, as all of us would agree on. The friends you make through any sport, but especially to rugby, you know, they're there for life, because on the pitch there's no real opportunity for glory by yourself. You know, you're working with your team, you're protecting each other, so it's an amazing sport to be a part of.
It's the ultimate team sport, isn't it? I mean, the 15 go on the field, and I suppose people say you're willing to die for each other and the whole lot, but there is that real element of you will stand up for each other, you will push every inch of the field to get over the line. You know, if somebody makes a mistake, it's everybody's responsibility to fix it and get it, and if some crowd score a try, you know, it's nobody's fault as such, it's the team, the whole lot. Does that what stands it apart?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think our semi-final against Clonakilty, it was that team spirit of the never-ending fight, and, you know, there was the last 2 minutes and Clonakilty were near their try line, but the team spirit with us, everyone going after the tackle, everyone protecting each other, I think that's what won the game, and hopefully we bring that same spirit to the final as well and hopefully get the same result of a win.
I'm going to ask you a difficult question, but I say you're ready for it, okay? Referees, the whole respect thing, it's a different level at rugby. There is a level of respect.
There is, yeah. Honestly, you know, you'd want to say your words to the ref when you know they're in there. You might think they're in wrong, but like...
But for some reason, it stays in the head. It doesn't come out. It's never a thing. And the whole idea that you have to get it from your captain and the whole lot... That's good for sport.
Yeah, it is very good, because it's like by the time you get it to your captain, like, and through people to get it to the ref, like, is there even a point? He doesn't really change his answer, like, by the end of the day, so there's no point. You just really have to keep your tongue tied and get on with the game, like.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, keep your head on your shoulders as well, because, I mean, at the end of the day, you don't want things to upset you. And it's like you said, referees don't change their mind, high up or low down, no matter whether they're right or wrong or indifferent, they won't change it. Speak to me about Lily Morris. She's taken one step further, hasn't she?
She has. Lily got on the Irish under-18s team last year. She actually got a player of her position for the Six Nations, which was on in England last year, and now she's been drafted into an Irish under-20 training squad. So because she's just slightly the provincial age group for the girls is under-18, so she can play club because it's under-18 and a half. So yeah, and they're just been announced there today that Nia Briggs has actually been appointed as the head coach for the Irish under 20 girls squad during the summer. They're going to play Six Nations as well. So look, huge honour and a huge honour for this area. And look, I'm following the footsteps of great people, players like Kira Griffin in the past and that, and you know, and that's what these girls, like Fia spoke about the younger girls and looking, or Ali spoke about the younger girls looking up, and that's exactly, hopefully in time, you know, you want those younger girls coming into the environment. I spoke to a contact, someone that does a lot of work at Tralee over the weekend, and he said they've kind of huge numbers at under 12s and under 14 girls playing, and even this year they it's the third year in a row that they've had the introduction of women's rugby at schools level, and the number of teams and schools that are participating has grown hugely as well, which is just always encouraging to kind of keep developing the game, and that's what's required at grassroots roots level.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. And of course Niamh Briggs is a big name within the sport. I mean, she's obviously a Six Nations winner as well from Waterford, good footballers well back in her day. Siobhan Fleming and Sharon Lynch, of course, from Castle Island, all great players who made the step up onto international level and the whole lot. Is it a big jump from here to international level? I mean, you've obviously been kind of with the Munster Brigade and maybe around an Irish camp or two. Is it a higher level? Is it a more demanding level? Is it a level that you're well able to achieve and jump, and you're saying, yeah, you know, I'm right at home here. I mean, this is where I want to be.
Well, I'd love to think it's a level I can achieve. But, yeah, obviously, the higher up you go, you're going to step up, you're going to get more challenges in your position, in your squad.
Does the game become sharper, or I mean, are you challenged? Is the time less than that you would have maybe playing with Killarney or people on top of you straight away, or is it that maybe even the coaching kind of steps up another bit where it's more kind of game management and all that?
I think we're really blessed with our coaches here in Killarney. They would be
taking know their stuff next.
I think obviously the game gets quicker. I suppose me and fly half, it's the kind of split second stuff, so I suppose I'd really see that kind of just switch in speed. But I think wherever you go, the basics of the sport is going to stay the same, so if you have your basics right, you're gonna do well wherever you are.
Mm-hmm. Do you sit at home in Killarney and watch the Munster games?
Yes, absolutely.
So you know what's going right and wrong at the moment, yeah?
Maybe. I wouldn't have the best opinion, maybe, or the most reliable.
If you were the coach last night against Northampton, how would your view be on it?
I don't know, really. I guess maybe they could, if they came and watched our games and took some advice from our plays, maybe they might form a bit better, but no.
Well, so if you never give up big leads, no? You don't give up big leads, obviously,
no.
You know, you close out the door. Come here, we'll wrap it up in a second. Are you looking forward to the final?
Oh, by God, I am. Jesus. It'd be nerve-wracking, though, everybody in the dressing room. God, our dressing room's tense before games. Jesus. You wouldn't want to be getting on the bad side anymore before you go out, anyway.
And when you go home, I mean, to Guineagrilla now, I mean, obviously not everybody in Guineagrilla is playing rugby but you, but, I mean, they know you're playing rugby. Do more people chat to you about it, or do more people say, God, you're in the team, I saw you on the team, I saw you playing, you're getting on well, the best of luck to you, or are your family running around the place telling everybody?
Oh, Jesus, my family would be very proud of me now. My mum, she wouldn't stop talking about me to our friends about her daughter playing the rugby, but yeah, I guess we'd be known in the school for playing rugby because we got awards there back for winning under-16s, the Munster and Cup and League, and we'd be known for that. And there's also another boy in our school playing rugby too, so we'd be kind of known as like the Hardy Bucks, all right, like
the Hardy Bucks in Guineagrilla. Well, that must make you really hard because there's no soft people out in Guineagrilla. Come here, in Dr. Croke's land, Elio Donohoe, the family happy, delighted? Do they come to the matches? Do they say no, like, you could have done that better, or, you know, lay off that a bit, or?
My dad would definitely have an opinion. I'm also very lucky my mom's involved in the coaching panel here. It's a huge kind of honour to have her along the way. She wouldn't maybe say that she'd have a big rugby background, but she's a huge asset to the team. But no, the family are all very proud.
Do you talk about it at breakfast time?
Sometimes, like, a little bit, but like, as Ella was saying, you know, everyone in the family, when they hear you're playing rugby, it's kind of a shock or like a taken back, but you know, it's like the tough one of the family, maybe. That's kind of the label that you're getting, but no, they're all very proud and they definitely all do come to the matches and give a good match analysis after to you.
Absolutely. And that's what you want. I mean, you want that support. And of course, that's where it begins. The family need to give the support? I mean, obviously, it's a big, challenging world out there. People want to play football, they want to go basketball, they want to row the whole lot. And it's a big step to make a decision like it. But, I mean, that support, the initial support from the family, then into the club, that builds another community. And before you know it, I mean, you have friends that you didn't think you had or people that you knew that you didn't know, and that kind of helps the whole journey.
Oh, it does, absolutely. Especially in a rugby club, it's... They're coming in from a young age and they're developing, and even with the new girls coming in, I think just that ethos. And look, like any time, the first step coming into a club is the hardest step, but like probably the worst step is when you leave, and when these girls are kind of finished on their under-18s and stuff, and they're leaving behind good friends, but they also realise that they have those friends for life as well, because they'll have shared kind of those battlefields in Clonakilty or in Musgrave Park in 2 weeks' time or wherever, and those are kind of things that create memories for life, and that's what life's about, and playing various sports and adding value to other sports, that's kind of what we try to give them as coaches,
Absolutely. Fia, last question, co-captain. I suppose you have all sorts of speeches, mate, have you? Ones to give out to the backs and ones to give out to the forwards and ones to give out to fellas or girls who don't pass or whatever.
Well, I don't think we've any ball hogs back in Clonakilty. We tend to do what's best. I suppose it's easy enough on me now. We've enough characters in the team who will step up and say...
And you're at a stage now where you've done this at another level and you've done it at a different level and you're just kind of getting older together and kind of maturing together as a team with a few new faces along the way.
I think what we seem to be really good at is pulling in our own separate knowledge that we may have got from other squads or stuff, and we bring it all back and we really combine that well to get the performances we do get out on the pitch.
Well, Dermot, Ali, Fia, you need no look at all, Lila. You're ready to go already. The very best of luck. Musgrave Park, great place to be playing a final too, isn't it, Dermot?
No, it's a fantastic opportunity to play there, and they have a finals day, so there's kind of three different finals on that day. So again, incredible experience to play in Musgrave Park for these girls. That's what you try for, and that's what we've been training since August, and you want to be at the business end of the season and playing in these finals and just getting that day out and hopefully getting the results. But if you not get the results, you're doing everything you possibly can to reach your potential, and if it goes well on the day, it goes well on the day,
I'm sure it'll go well on the day.
Please, God.
Yeah, you deserve it. Listen, guys, thanks very much for coming this evening. The very best of luck. Now you have to wait an extra week, which that's only a small thing, bit more fitness, whatever, in between. We'll be keeping an eye on it. And just about dear Ella, actually, sorry, we'll put the cup when you bring it back, all right? Will you come back with the cup, will you?
Oh, by God, we will.
We'll make a date now for it, okay?
Yeah.
All right, okay. 2 weeks from now.
Yeah, we'll have to put you in the waiting list, though.
Fair play to you, huh? Deirdre Walsh, I suppose, beat me to it again. Listen, guys, the very best of luck to you with the Munster final, and fingers and toes and everything crossed that you'll all come back safe and sound and a cup as well. We'll take a break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now, Kerry will be the location for the service park, of course, for one of the three FIA World Rally Championships rallies that Motorsport Ireland will be hoping to stage in the country between 2025 and 2027. Of course, you remember a couple of weeks ago we sent Ivan all the way up to Dublin, washed the car out and everything, and sent him up just for the good news, and he came back with great news that it was all shared between all the three, and we came back with Tralee. And of course, what we're going to do over the next couple of weeks is we're going to look maybe a little bit more into the sport, because to get an understanding of how big an event this actually is, and I mean, we were drilling down through some of the numbers there last week and we're saying, my God, this is absolutely huge. Tell us how huge it is.
I suppose in layman's terms, Donal, it's second only to the FIA Formula 1 World Championship.
That sentence sounds absolutely crazy to think, because everybody knows what the Formula 1 is, and this is second to it, which is absolutely amazing.
Absolutely, and it's manufacturer-led. The three main manufacturers would be Hyundai, Toyota and Ford. In Division 1, there's Division 2 as well, which would include Skoda, Citroen, and an element of Toyota, an element of Ford, and an element of Hyundai as well. So big international interest, big, you think of the Formula One circus, how big that is when it rolls into town. There's a slight difference. When a Formula One circus rolls into town, they visit existing circus like Silverstone in the UK or Spa-Francorchamps in Belgium. The facility exists already. The World Rally tends to build its service park, build its pit stop, if you like, in a venue in the host town. So with Tralee being granted host town status and the university being granted the area to host the service park, the likes of Toyota, Hyundai, Citroen, etc., Ford will appear in town maybe 6 to 8 days before the event and start creating this pit stop in the MTU. And that then will become the focal point for both the teams for the weekend. They'll have catering there, they'll have media facilities, the media zone will be based there, the television companies, all that will be based in the MTU, and it'll become the central hub of the whole event over the 4 or 5 days that the race itself takes place. It will also become the central zone for the fans, where the general public can get up, meet the drivers, meet the world champions, the contenders for the world championship that year, all up close and personal. And rallying tends to be a little bit less strict with the rules, if you like, than Formula One. So access to the drivers is a little bit easier, access to the teams, access to the cars is just that little bit easier than what you expect in Formula One. So even though it's kind of one step down, it's a lot more open.
The TV global audience, 841 million people in 2022 watched some shape, form of World Rally.
Absolutely.
That's some amount of people over the course of a year to watch a sport that we are trying to kind of get ourselves up to fairly quickly to educate ourselves and become huge supporters as we do as Irish people. But for the people who are already huge supporters, this must be like Vegas come to town, is it?
It's absolutely. It's a circus. It's a travelling circus. They visit 13 countries all over the world throughout the year. The season's just started this weekend in Monte Carlo. 3 weeks from now, 2.5 weeks from now, that entire circus that was in Monte Carlo and Gap in the south of France will be rebuilt in Umeå in Sweden. And the whole operation just moves north over the next couple of weeks, and they're in the tear down in Gap today, taking all the equipment that was there for the last five or six days. It's all been loaded into trucks today. Tomorrow they hit the road. Next stop is northern Sweden, the Arctic Circle, and rebuild the whole lot. And as that circus carries on in 2025, 26, 27, we don't know yet whether we're going to be first, second or third. It doesn't matter. When that circus, we'll just say, for example, we are 2025, yeah, and we're going to be somewhere around 9 or 10. So they'll be leaving Finland on their way to Greece via Tralee. Mm. And that's the way that travelling circus works.
Ivan Hurley, you're a massive fan of this. You're talking to me every week about it, and I have my ears shut, and I was like, God, would you go away rally driving and the whole lot? Because what I see, obviously, isn't what you see. I mean, you've travelled around the place, and you've seen this in action in some huge countries.
Absolutely, a bit like Sean, I suppose. Sean's been a lot more seasoned traveller than I am, but I've been around the world to see like the likes of Finland and Spain as well. And, you know, it's all as what Sean describes, it's a complete circus, and it's the crowds it brings, of course, as well. You're on about TV audience, and as Sean was in Monte Carlo this weekend, I was sitting down watching it on the telly. But, you know, it's the crowds it does bring to these towns is unbelievable. And rallying is a form of tourism as well, where you visit the smallest areas, the most rural parts of the country that probably has never seen a tourist until a World Rally Championship comes, and driving cars up back lanes and everything. It's just, it brings a huge crowd into areas that, you know, tourists would never be. And like that, it's fantastic. That, but it does get a chance to come to Tralee and the surrounding areas in Kerry. It'll be, it's hard to describe what it'll be like. You're just, it's just amazing. It's, as I say, it's just a big circus of cars and everybody everywhere for the weekend. It's fantastic to see.
For the rally community, Ivan, I mean, getting it to hear is a huge vote of confidence in it.
Absolutely. Look, I remember when I was younger in 2007, 2009, travelling up the country, and Ireland last held the World Rally Championship, and it's the excitement around it. Like, we've got our local rallies here, which we all get excited about and you hear enough of, but when something like this comes, it's the next level. And the rally community in Ireland, you know, the excitement, you mentioned going up to Dawson Street to get the announcement. The interest was even just in the announcement of where this thing was going to be held was huge, and the spark in tourism, the hotel rooms, everything else in around it will be massive. And that's just from a local and national sort of perspective. And it's the rally tourists coming from further afield, the likes of Sean going to Gap in the south of France and booking a hotel like that wouldn't be booked if the rally wasn't on. So the interest from the rally world, and even watching some of the rally media from Finland across the world, they're all, you know, begging for Ireland to come back into Canada. It's the one they want to see as well. They all see the Irish Championship, probably a small bit jealous of how good the national championships are here in Ireland, and they want to sample that in the world stage again.
Mm-hmm. The place in the calendar we got, 8 or 9 or wherever it is, that's a good place to get, I'd imagine, because at that stage teams will have built up points and it's getting more competitive, and you will have a competitive...
The competitive element of the event is very, very important, but when you're talking about 800 million TV viewers, the trick to this is the television footage. And when Motorsport Ireland announced an idea maybe 18 months ago to 12 months ago that they were trying to get the World Rally Championship back to Ireland, they immediately said it was not going to be in the winter time like the 2007-2009 events that were in. One of them was in late November, the other was in late January. They wanted the long summer evenings, late August, early September, the blue skies. You think of something like Sleighhead, the Wild Atlantic Way, the helicopter flying over Sleighhead, looking down on the rally cars. That is in itself an advertisement. It's a picture postcard, perfect advertisement for West Kerry, for the whole county, the whole country. And not alone will the rally bring 800 million TV viewers and put County Kerry in that global audience, a large percentage of those viewers will get a notion to come on holidays to this part of the world. And while the competitive element is very important, and we were down there at the weekend, we were reporting on the results and all the rest of it, 800 million people are not interested in the result. There's only going to be a certain faction that are interested in the result. This is a bit like the Tour de France, where you watch the Tour de France for the scenery, you watch the Tour de France for the history, the commentators telling us the history, the castle in the background or whatever. This is the same thing, really.
And it did have a huge effect. I remember when Enda Kenny was the Minister for Tourism at the time, and it came down to Wexford, the Tour de France and the whole lot, and all of a sudden you had people coming over just to see Wexford and the South East Coast and the whole lot. And this is what rallying, in a sense, is giving to our area, Kerry.
Absolutely.
As well as Limerick.
And again, as I have kind of hinted at there, you think the Rally Monte Carlo, its host town for the last week was Gap in the Haute Alps region of France. Town about the same size as Tralee. There wasn't a hotel bed to be got. You had to pre-book 2 nights in advance, 3 nights in advance, your restaurants. But then the rally visits the smaller communities. And really, like, you're talking places as small as maybe Arfurts, Kilgarvan, Sneems, they're all going to be busy, but depending on where the final route is allocated at all. But this is as much about the big town getting the hotels, the small villages, the lads setting up their little own personal burger stalls outside their house and their traditional meats and cheeses for sale.
Horse right boxes will be back out again.
That kind of stuff, yeah. But it's. I think the best way to describe this circus, and I just mentioned as well, is that nearly every listener here to Radio Kerry is familiar with the Tour de France and the concept of it. Whether you're interested in the results of the cycle race or who's in yellow jersey every evening, doesn't really matter. It's much the same with the World Rally. You're visiting some of the most rural places in the world. There's thousands of people visiting these little villages. They're all spending a fiver, or they're all spending 105, it doesn't matter. So everyone's going to get something out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And everybody will get something out of it, because over the next couple of weeks, we're going to break it down for people. We're going to talk about the cars and the venues and basically getting maybe a bluffer's guide, in a sense, you know, because obviously we can't just rock up and all have horse boxes and sell burgers. I mean, some of us will have to pretend to be fans. Ivan Hurley, I mean, for you, it's super exciting, is it? I mean, some of the quality of the cars and the drivers and the whole lot, I mean, you know this, so it's your job to educate the rest of us.
Absolutely. No, we intend to do that over the next couple of weeks. I mean, look, as you say, it's something that we watch. If we're not at the rallies, we watch it religiously. It's like watching your Formula 1 or like watching your GA or whatever. We follow this thing religiously, and me and Sean could tell you everything that happened this weekend that maybe not a huge amount of other people in Kerry might be able to do outside of the community.
There probably is people there that want to hear and want to listen and want to learn.
Absolutely, and we'd be here to do it 100% of the way. We don't give up talking about the sport we love.
Sure, he has to talk about some. No, Jurgen Klopp is gone. I mean, there's not much else.
But sure, the best opportunity for people to get involved is the Irish season openers this weekend, the Galway International Rally. Great to see Kerry interest in the rally. There's at least three Kerry co-drivers seated in the top 15. Nola Sullivan Jr., the defending Irish tarmac champion, alongside Callum Devine from County Derry. They're the top seeds in the rally. Great to see Keith Cronin making a return, and his navigators Mikey Galvin from Ahado, and Gerard Conway is alongside Garrett McHale. I think they're seated around 14 or 15, so three Kerry co-drivers in the top 15. We'll be going up there to cheer them on anyway.
Fair play to you, and of course and we'll return of course next week as well, thank God, fingers crossed. Thanks to Keane, thanks to Ivan. Mary's up next with Talk Sus, and the boys will be back to us next week and over the next couple of weeks when we talk all rally.